think that we can get much higher than this.
You are listening to Can't Get Much Higher, a podcast and newsletter about the intersection of music and data. My name is Chris Dallariva, and I am your host. So the other day, I was scrolling through TikTok, as I do way too many days, scrolling, and I came across this singer who I see sometimes, and I just think that they're lying. And I don't mean they're lying about their voice. They're really an incredible singer. They could sing circles around most people. They have millions of followers. But I think they're lying about their concerts. They're always posting videos of them on stage, but I swear the videos are recorded in a warehouse with crowd noise piped in. I'm not going to tell you their name because I don't need to spread any more online hate. But if you saw these videos, you might think the same thing. But would this really be a shock? Not really. I mean, the fundamental conceit of social media is arguably dishonesty. You can portray yourself in any way you wish. But that's when I realized something else. Recorded music is largely built on dishonesty. And I want to talk about that today. But before we do, I just want to remind you that this podcast is also a newsletter. If you go to the description of this podcast, you can click over to the newsletter. And, you know, there's charts, data, pictures there. Their newsletter subscribers also get additional content. But more importantly, we do a monthly mailbag edition of our newsletter where I answer reader, listener questions. If you have a question, shoot it over to me. If you go to the newsletter, you can find my contact. And if I select your question, you'll get a premium subscription to the newsletter for a month, which is great. You get additional content. So go check that out. It's one of my favorite features that we do. But anyway, let's turn back to lying. Here's a New York Times headline that I came across recently. How no talent singers get talent. When do you think this headline was written? You can make the case for tons of different years. Maybe it was written in the 1980s about artists with lackluster vocals making it big on the back of a flashy music video. Maybe it was written in the 2000s about auto-tune laden hits by Lil Wayne and Kanye West. How could you be so Maybe it was written just a few weeks ago about artists experimenting with artificial intelligence technology. None of these suppositions would be correct, though. This article was written for the June 21st, 1959 edition of the New York Times by critic John S. Wilson. According to his obituary, Wilson, quote, came to the New York Times in 1952 and was the newspaper's first critic covering popular music, end quote. On this cloudy Sunday in 1959, he was upset about how, quote, recording techniques have become so ingenious that almost anyone can be a singer, end quote. Wilson goes on, and here's a bigger quote. A small flat voice can be souped up by emphasizing the low frequencies and piping the result through an echo chamber. A slight speeding up of the recording tape can bring a brighter, happier sound to a naturally drab singer or clean up the weariness of a tired voice. Wrong notes can be snipped out of the tape and replaced by notes from other parts of the tape. So this article in that passage primarily fascinates me because if you made small edits to it, it could sound like it was written in literally any year. But it also fascinates me because Wilson, the author, seems unhappy with nearly every piece of technology that helps bring a recording to life. He criticizes Elvis Presley's voice for being, quote, so doctored up with echoes that he sounded as though he were going to shake apart. Well, if your baby leaves you, you got a tale to tell. He notes holiday favorite The Chipmunk Song as exemplary of studio trickery because it was really Ross Bagdasarian's voice, quote, played double speed and blended by a process called overdubbing. He laments producers being able to, quote, rearrange a recording after the performers have left the studio, end quote. He cites Whispering Jack Smith, a star of the 1920s, as representing the move toward the synthetic singer because Smith, quote, found that the microphone eliminated the need for real vocal projection. Shades of night are falling and I'm lonely. For John S. Wilson, it seems, the entire enterprise of recorded music is suspect. Truth and honesty in music is conveyed when you have a group playing together. A recording should just capture the performance of that group with as little technological mediation as possible. Wilson is not alone in believing this. Take a trip through the history of recorded music and you will find musicians and fans continuously negotiating how recordings should sound and what they should represent. In the early days of recording, the debate focused on if sound should be reproduced on discs or cylinders. Soon after, the debate shifted to the merits of acoustic versus electrical sound capture. Once electrical recording to discs became commonplace, the debate focused on if those discs should spin at 33 or 78 revolutions per minute. After that, the sonic thinkers of the day were concerned with stereophonic versus monophonic sound. More recently, the debate has focused on digital versus analog sound. In Greg Milner's tremendous book, Perfecting Sound Forever, An Aural History of Recorded Music, he makes the point that each of these debates is litigating the same basic idea. What does it mean to, quote, make a record of music, a representation of music, and declare it to be music itself? The history of recorded music is a history of answering this question, a history of deciding which methods are honest and which are deceptive. You may think the deception began with artificial intelligence, or pitch correction, or reverb, or equalization, but it really began with a much more fundamental idea, namely the idea that if you don't like how something sounds, you can record it again and again and again. I'm not here to tell you that recording a second take of something is a mortal sin. I'm here to tell you that no matter what music you like, as long as it's been recorded, you have been deceived. If you like Strawberry Fields Forever by the Beatles, you have been deceived. The final recording is two takes at different speeds and different keys smashed together by the production genius of George Martin.
Let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to Strawberry Fields.
If you like Kiss's classic album Alive, you have been deceived. Basically, the entirety of an album reported to be recorded on stage was overdubbed in the studio. If you like Hungry Heart by Bruce Springsteen, you have been deceived. The final recording was sped up to add excitement. If you like when the prisoners hoot and holler at Johnny Cash singing the line, I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die, in his live rendition of Folsom Prison Blues at the Folsom State Prison, you have been deceived. The prisoner rowdiness was added after the fact.
But I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die.
So is there some true, honest, ideal way to record music? Is there some perfect process that we should be using to capture sound properly? No, but I'll take this idea even further. I'm skeptical that there is a true, honest, ideal way to make music even if you aren't recording. Let's turn back to one of John S. Wilson's gripes to explain. In his article, Wilson lamented the success of Whispering Jack Smith in the 1920s. Smith, Wilson claims, represented the, quote, move toward the synthetic singer because the microphone eliminated the need for real vocal projection.
Shades of night are falling and I'm lonely.
To understand what this means, compare Whispering Jack Smith to Enrico Caruso, maybe the most popular singer of the early 1900s. Caruso's booming, operatic voice exemplified vocal projection. But why did Caruso sing like this and not like the soft-spoken Whispering Jack Smith? It was largely for technological reasons. First, Caruso, born in 1873, began his career before microphones were regularly used in concert. If he wanted to be heard, he had to sing loudly. Second, when Caruso first started recording, you had to sing into a giant horn. Again, if you were not loud, the horn couldn't capture the sound. To John S. Wilson, Enrico Caruso's vocal style is the correct way to sing. Whispering Jack Smith's vocal style is not just incorrect, but it is deceptive. Smith is using the new microphone technology that can pick up a larger range of sound to cover up the fact that he can't really sing well. In reality, Enrico Caruso's vocal styling is no more correct or honest or true than Whispering Jack Smith's. From my perspective, Smith's vocals are the beginning of a long line of vocalists that includes Frank Sinatra.
In the wee small hours of the morning.
And Billie Eilish.
Don't you know I'm no good for you.
Who use the recording studio to convey emotions that might not be possible to convey on a stage without any amplification. And that's not just okay, but it's what the studio is for. Once you realize the breadth and depth of music that is created around the world, you realize that there isn't some objectively correct way to make music. If the music moves you, if it moves the people around you, then you are making music as honestly as has ever been made. If you think otherwise, you're going to miss out on a lot of great stuff. As always, we recommend a new song and an old song each week. As a reminder, if you're looking to listen to all of the new and old songs that we recommended, just go to the description of your podcast provider and there are links to playlists. This week's new song is Obvious by After. Growing up, I was a musical snob, looking down on basically any artist who made music without guitars and bass and drums. Of course, I came to my senses. but I mourn all of the music that I missed out on because of these silly attitudes. If I hadn't changed, I would have certainly missed out on Obvious, the latest single from the duo After. Why would young Chris have been turned off by this warm crossover that harkens back to the 1990s? It's built around guitars and wistful vocal harmonies. Those check the boxes of music that I considered legitimate. The problem would have arisen from the percussion. It was at least partially made with a drum machine. I found drum machines repellent. They were the pinnacle of musical falsehood. This is, of course, not true. Don't be like me. You should vibe to drum machines, especially when they are backing nice melodies like the one you hear in Obvious. The old song this week takes us back to 1951. It's called Get Out Those Old Records by Guy Lombardo and his Royal Canadians. So I'll admit, I sort of feel bad for ragging on John S. Wilson throughout the bulk of this piece. Wilson was a prolific jazz critic for decades. Plus, he insisted on freelancing for the New York Times rather than joining the staff because a staff position, quote, would mean having to attend meetings. A man who hates meetings is a man I will respect. Regardless, Wilson's piece is a good reminder that many of the arguments we have about music have been going on for a long time, albeit in slightly different forms. But it's not just our conversations about music that move in circles. It's also the topics that we sing about. Take this Guy Lombardo song from 1951 called Get Out Those Old Records as an example. As the name suggests, this song sees Lombardo and his bandmates longing for the music of yore. Nostalgia, of course, is nothing new. But longing for old records when the music industry is barely 50 years old will always be funny to me.
get out those old records, those old phonograph records, the ones we used to play so long ago. What if they sound scratchy? The tunes really were catchy, and especially those that said, I love you so. I used to beg you over and over just to set the wedding day. To get you courtable, I'd bring my portable and melt your heart away. With all those old records, those old phonograph records, the ones we used to play so long ago. Those old
all the ones about records,
those old
all the ones about records,
the ones
Kitten
we used to play so long ago.
On the old wind-up Victrola, Barney Google was great.
The tunes,
all the songs
really
about Kate,
and especially
jada,
those
jada,
that
boo,
said I love you so.
Yucca, hula, hicky,
I used to beg you over and over just to set the wedding day. To get you portable, I'd bring my portable
socks
and melt your heart away. With all those old,
they were wonderful
records. Those old,
play them over again.
The ones we used to play so long ago. The ones we used to play so long ago.
And that is the podcast. Again, my name is Christopher Dallariva. If you like this podcast, go to the description. If you want to listen to all the old and new songs, there are links. Also, you get to the newsletter that is paired with this podcast. Subscribe to the newsletter for additional content that is not available on the podcast. If you do that or not, I will be back next week to whisper into your ears, hopefully as smoothly as whispering Jack Smith.